You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Hello and welcome to The Kylo Show. We are live today.
Oh,
we are having a lot of fun and it's exciting. We are going live because it's something that you have asked for, that it's, you know, we do Q&A. Sessions, but it's either a recording or an email, and
it's not in the now. It's
no.
not like you get to ask a question and get it answered. Seriously. Right now, right here.
I think the hardest part about when someone, you know, messages you on Instagram, so they don't even have their voice, and they just ask a question, and there's so many questions that
I don't get to have a conversation here. We just get stuck with, I think this is what you meant, I hope.
Maybe, and maybe I'm way off, but yeah. Hopefully it helps somebody. So that's the beauty of having a live audience with us today, is that we actually get to go back and forth.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing this for a while.
We're having fun.
And if you're not on our email, please get on our email so that you can get the link. And if you had a question, you could jump on here as well.
That's what you need to do.
Yeah.
But you should just get on the email list anyways, because there's lots of good stuff on there if
totally.
You're not on there. But let's not waste any more time, and we'll jump into our live audience here in the studio, because that's fun to say. All right. Our first question. Jennifer, what do you have for us?
Well, hello. Thank
Hi.
You for the invite. I'm so glad to be here, you guys. Just love you both and your ministry, and really has changed my life. It's so hard to even put into words. So, but I have a great question, I think, for you. One of the things that Danny, you have said that really caught my ear, and it came back to memory, was you had said something about, you were talking about being a parent and children, and you said, well, the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life is, or something like that, to that effect. The hardest thing you'll do is, or the hardest thing that will happen for you is having adult relationships with your adult children.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Gosh, I was really hoping that it would get, you know, a little easier.
Well,
so
it can't,
So I was like, I wonder what he really meant by that. Because you didn't really, you know, explain it. Because it was just kind of a fun thing. I mean, I know you meant it, but I also know that you were talking with somebody that had younger children. And, so my question for you is maybe to expound a little bit on what you meant by that, so I can gain a little more understanding by what you think is difficult. But I also have, I have two adult children. One of them is 31, and she's married and has two kids, and they both love Jesus and really are doing well and have great community and love one another, and, you know, very happy people and just a joy to be around. So they, it's pretty easy and always has been. And then I have a 20-year-old son who lives in our house right now with my husband and I, and he has been a delight of my heart too. Just a really neat kid, always has been very connective and able to speak, you know, even at a young age with adults and express. And so he's a really interesting young man, and he had a really tough time right before COVID. He was really kind of just taking his life into his own hands and really being deceitful. We had no idea. I knew there was something going on. I was very concerned for him, but I could not get to understand that for a while. And he just was really making a big mess in his life. And he has come out of that. Thank you, Jesus. And he has come to know the Lord for himself. And he's just, again, delightful, so delightful to be around. I'm so glad that he's in our lives, and he really adds to our family, and he is great. So here's my question. So he's 20, and he's been through a lot. He actually sees a therapist and also a coach, and he's involved in community, doing really well, and he's very easy to talk to. So if I had something I wanted to talk to him about, he would be so open to hear it. And very respectful and honoring. But my question is, I thought I'd give you just a little background just so you had an idea. But I know I'm trying to get there. I guess my question is, how as a parent do I practically make sure I am helping him continue to move forward in his life with the things that he wants to do? He's working, you know, a job at a grocery store. He's not going to college right now. I think he's got some ideas about what he wants to do. He wants to help people, probably with, you know, like, not physically, but, you know, emotionally, relationally, like a counselor. And he's always kind of desired that. So I'm just trying to figure out how, as his mom, him living in our home, and he does get some things provided from us, obviously, he lives in our home, and I'm happy to do that while he's figuring this out. But how do I make sure I don't want to overstep, because I've done that. I did that in fear, and I don't want to do that. And I also don't want to understep and not have a place where I'm helping him continue to move forward. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What's his relationship with his dad like?
His dad has been going through a journey, and is probably at a place where he just recently went to go see a counselor for one time, and he's learning how to be emotionally available and also just available in general. But he's loving, and he's trust, you know, you can trust him, and he's a kind man, and he provides for his family. But his son does come to me a lot. But he also goes to his dad more and more now, which is great. And because he's been able to just kind of make that happen, and he responds pretty decently. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to speak in generalities right now.
Okay.
Because I don't know your husband, I don't know your son, but I am just going to say things like, men learn to be men from men, not from women.
What?
Okay. So that's a pretty important adjustment for moms to understand, because, right. It's, you know, you're really wanting your son to develop his masculine energy, his masculine worldview, his accountability to other men to be manly. And he learns none of that from women. Okay. So he's really on a journey as a young man to become purposeful, responsible, to provide, to protect, and to do a great job connecting. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, he's got to look around and find some men to emulate and to get feedback from, and even to be evaluated by. See, men running together, they provide a really great dynamic of feedback. It's usually through chiding and teasing and you know, making fun of each other. And that is really a healthy shame, in a sense that, you know, I learn to up my game from being around men that are bigger, stronger, better, more capable than me. And when moms intervene in that and protect, because I don't want you to get your feelings hurt, then you just prolong the development of your young man into becoming a good man. And so you really, really want him to toughen up a little bit and to be able to run with the men, so that in doing so, he will have a community of men that will hold him accountable to be a godly man, to be a good husband, to be a good father, to be a good provider, to protect his family, to lead in love. Like it's his job to bring the standard of love to his family. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. It's not wives, love your husbands as Christ loved the church. But classically, that's the mistake we make, is we put the women in charge of the love. The man's in charge of making money and the women's in charge of everything else in the home. You're like, okay, mistake. The man needs to be bringing the chief sacrifice, the chief connector, the chief leader with his heart. You know, that's a role that men have to learn if they're going to put Christ on display in their homes. Now, that was all in generalities. Now, I'm painting with a roller right now. There's no eyelashes on this painting yet. So I'm just trying to throw out there that this would be the standard that you would want to be pushing your boy into, and mm-hmm. and for him to find that, so that you don't end up intercepting maybe a relationship between him and his dad or him and some other men that aren't women.
Yeah. I hear you on that. And the good news is he's on that journey, which is great. Because he went to Braveco on his own.
Boom. Great.
Go there, traveled from Iowa to California, hit it, came back. He's got a coach. He's got a mentor. And he's got a brother-in-law that he's very close to and runs things by, asks for feedback all the time. He's very honest. So he's headed in that direction, and he's been talking to his dad more. And I've been laying off. I don't ask as many questions. I guess we're probably doing pretty well based on what you said. So that's really encouraging.
Great.
And I'll just keep doing that. I like that whole idea. Learn men to be men from men. Mm-hmm. Coming from a single parent household raised by a woman and two sisters, trust me, I definitely need to hear that. So,
yeah.
But anyways, thank you for your time.
That's great.
That's really
good. Awesome.
Great.
All right. Bring up the men. Let's go.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. Love it.
Ask me why that's in the front of my mind.
I have no idea. Yeah, yeah. Why are you thinking about
this? I'm finishing up Dragon Slayers, which is 7 reasons men need brothers. And it's very, 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 very fun. Yeah. Very fun journey for me. It puts all the stuff on the surface. Sorry, Jennifer, to spray you with all that, but yeah.
It's needed. It's a needed conversation. It's good.
But it's on the forefront of my mind.
Yeah. It is. No, I think, I mean, if anyone's got young boys still in the house, I would say, you know, one of the big things that I'm doing, knowing this, it's very loud in our home, is if I'm frustrated about our son has moved into a different realm now. He's no longer this little cub that I'm taking care of. He's kind of becoming a young man. And so anytime I'm frustrated with behavior or something I need him to be challenged in, instead of me going in and doing it, I'm usually having conversations with Ben, because I need him to see another man model this and pull out an opportunity for him to struggle through this thing that he's resisting or disrespect he's giving or different things, because he's in a new season. He's in this preteen stage and he is right on the line of starting to hit puberty. I mean, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And so if I keep jumping in there, I just disrupt the timing of him. And I think that that's one of the things that I've learned as a mom with boys still in the house, is being willing to go to Ben and say, I need help. And I think your son needs you right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not that he's, you know, got full range in the house, but I'm throwing in dad, go get your boy. Mm-hmm. 'Cause he's driving me crazy. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. And I have to say, I didn't learn this journey, or I didn't even begin this journey in a healthy way until I was 21. You know, yeah. I was raised by a single mom And I had a bunch of guys in my life that I didn't want to be like.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I got saved and I got around some men that I did want to be like that I even began this transaction. And it was so powerful in my life and so valuable. And I am forever indebted to the community of men that helped shape me, because it really could have been ugly. It could have been.
We're all thankful for those men. We can all say
it could have been so bad.
Everyone would agree. Oh, okay. April, are you ready? We're going to jump to you for the next question.
Yeah. Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Good to see you.
I'm so glad to be here. And I have learned so much from y'all. So thank you for your contribution to the world. I have a question about small groups and dear relationships. So they're a little bit outside of our family, of, you know, our nuclear family or whatever you want to call it. But they're very important to us. We've been in their lives for over 10 years. But then about a month ago, we were challenged to take some risks for Jesus and try this other group that shares their faith a little more frequently and has more expectation. And we felt like a conviction that that is the direction we should go as a family for a season. And we were communicating this to our dear friends. Like, we kind of brought in one couple at a time to share, especially the ones we've known for a decade and been in community with. And it went well with most of them, but there has been a few like things. So we just wanted some wisdom on how to communicate, hey, this is not us leaving this connection. This is just us being committed to a different mission for a season, but we want to remain connected. And mm-hmm. So there have been some like conversations, and then we thought it was all good. And then when we started connecting with the other members of the group that are not as close to us, some of our closer friends who are leading the group, I don't know if it ruffled their feathers, and we have a connection set up, like a meeting to clarify some of it. But I don't know, just anything that you guys might want to offer in wisdom when you do feel like a pull in a different direction with someone you really care about, and you're not asking for them to leave your life. You're just asking them to have some grace as you try to figure out what God's calling you to. Does that even make sense? Is that helpful, or do you need a little more?
I think I understand what you're saying. The hard part, with small groups, the beauty of them is that you have these covenant relationships with people. And that's what it sounds like you've got, is these covenant relationships. And there's a stirring in your heart to just see what else God has for you. That's what I'm hearing. And so I'm imagining that your friends that you've had this covenant relationship from you are used to you showing up consistently on Wednesday nights at 7. And now you're like, we're not going to be coming anymore because we're going to go over here. And they're like, no, you're not. How dare you? You can't leave us. And I don't know that it's even that they're mad that you're going to experience God in a new way. Cause I bet that the core of them, they want this for you. What they're probably afraid of is that you're going to abandon them or leave the covenant. And so doing a really good job of communicating, I love you, I value this relationship, I'm not going to mistreat it or ignore it. But I am going to pursue what I feel like God is calling me to do. And I don't know what you need, but please let me know if you need something. And then you give whatever need you can give. If they say, well, we need you to be here Wednesdays at 7, you're like, I can in 3 months. And so that's the hard part, is that, when we change a little bit and we go towards health, whether it's like, let's say you have a potluck group of friends and all of a sudden you're only eating clean. I don't know that I've ever met many potlucks that have clean on them. They're casserole dishes covered in mayonnaise and creamed sauces. So, you're changing the game on them. And it's not out of disrespect for any of them. It's out of something that's needed for you. And so I think there is this balance of hearing they're scared, hearing they're sad, hearing maybe they're their worry of you disconnecting and doing all that you can to communicate, I want to protect, I want to stay connected, but also the boundary of, but I will chase after what I feel like God's calling me to do. And so there's this balance of you doing a really good job of that and putting that on display and hearing, you know, maybe can we adjust to Thursday night? If it's so important that I'm there, we might have to change the day because I can't change this day. But are you willing to change this day? I mean, I would start getting creative, but the first big thing is, what is that you need? What did you hear me say? And doing a good job communicating, I love and value this relationship and I want to protect this, but I'm also going to do this. So that's my take.
Yeah. Nobody likes change, especially if it wasn't their idea.
Totally.
And, so, you know, you kind of dropped a rock in the pond and they're trying to figure out what it exactly means. And, are you rejecting me? Are mm-hmm. you, you know, you don't, did I do something wrong? You know, are you leaving me? And the answer is yes. It is. You are using that same time for something else. That means that that person is not getting that time and that level of connection. Without having to be angry, you're adjusting your relationships. There's something over here that you need that you're going to go access. And you can only be in one place at a time, right? So when you go over here and say yes to this, you said no to what you used to say yes to. So now you're saying no where there used to be a yes. Mm-hmm. And people have a hard time with that. This is what happens when you leave your family to go get married. You change relationships. You're not mad at your family. You just found someone you want to spend way more time with. And so when you go spend all, you go give all this yes to this person, your family feels the no and they have to adjust. They're like, oh my gosh, she's growing up. That's what we say. She's growing up. That means she's giving her yes to someone else. We used to get it. Now she's giving it to someone else and we have to adjust or fight her. And so some people don't understand the boundaries of yes comes with experiencing someone's no, maybe for the first time in our relationship. And if you moved away, if you got a job in another city and you moved away, all those relationships would be getting a no that used to get a yes, and brand new relationships would be getting a yes that you didn't even know existed. So it's hard for people to change because it's very much about boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And you just keep your love on.
And you keep your love on, you keep a smile on your face, you stay empathetic, you stay compassionate. You don't change, you just changed where you're putting your yes.
I love that.
Does that make sense?
Oh my gosh, yes. I love the tool, like what do you feel like you need from us? And then also recognizing, I guess like the visceral fear that might be bubbling up in her is real. We are saying no to them for a season.
Yeah.
And having a little compassion around that. It's helpful.
Great. Great.
Yeah.
Good job, April.
Yeah.
Okay.
Way to grow. Way to keep growing.
Way to keep your priorities. That's how this life works.
So true.
Don't be afraid to say yes in the right spot.
Absolutely. All right, Emma, you're up next for our question.
Thank you. Kind of just touched on this. Oops, I'm sure these will kind of overlap, but I've got two things that are interlinked. I'm kind of curious to know where it is when you were talking, Danny, to a previous question around you expressing this is how I experience you and exchanging the truths. Where is it that where it can be because of your own filter. So I've been in an experience of a relationship where it could have been like from my own filters of my own wounds and things that have misread other people's behaviors, or my wounds have been triggered as a result of their behavior. And in the conversation that I tried to do, where I followed those principles of saying, okay, when you did this, I felt this, and this is how I experienced it. And the response I got was that it was my stuff that was being triggered, and it was all in my head. And I wasn't making it up, but it's my stuff that's been triggered, not them being kind of part of the puzzle. It was tricky because partly they were in leadership over me, so I didn't know it again. So this double fold on that. But I kind of felt very stumped in the response, because I guess I was expecting them to say, oh, I'm really sorry, let's talk about that. But where they came back, it's like, it's you, not me. I then felt very stuck of going, I now no longer know where to go further from that conversation. And in the end, I just shut down and kind of just pulled the conversation to an end because I felt a bit blindsided.
So Emma, right there. Emma, what did you feel when the person didn't listen to you? What did you feel?
Oh, gosh. I mean, firstly, I just felt really shut down, and partly because they came with a lot of heat and anger. But if I'm honest, I felt really confused, and it's really played me mentally from that point of just thinking, is what they said true? Like, am I just making it up, and is this my issue? And I think what I internalized it, how did it make me feel? I mean, it totally made me feel very scared to trust my own ability to discern things and speak up my mind. And I've not really ever broached conflicts really since then, because I've just felt I don't want to experience that again.
Yeah. I think when you share your experience with somebody else and they try to talk you out of it, it feels disrespectful and it can hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So you say something like, whoa. When people are not going to listen and they're just going to, I know this is an overused word, but gaslight you, which means, hey, here's reality. Okay, whatever's going on with you is not reality. Here's reality. I'll define reality for you. When someone does that in a conversation, you just want to hit them with a whoa. Because you feel powerless right now mm-hmm. to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
So going forward, you know, when somebody is not listening, you just go, whoa, 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 whoa. Because I'm not going to listen to any of your gaslighting or your judgments right now. I'll talk, you listen. And then we'll switch. You talk and I'll listen. But if you're not going to listen while I talk, I'll stop talking. I'll end this conversation. I do not want to participate in a disrespectful exchange with you. And when I'm talking and you're not listening, that feels very disrespectful to me. So, are you ready to listen, or should I stop talking?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does, which kind of follows me into my second question, which is, I can see in hindsight, as always, like there was some of my stuff that did get triggered. So it's not So I guess when I've always grown up with saying that, like, there's two sides to the same story. So, you know, my version of what I experienced versus their version, and kind of, which I think is what you related to when you talked about exchanging the truth, so that you can say your experience, they listen, and then they respond with their experience, and hopefully there's a mutual ability to
right. Journey. So if I could frame the idea of an experience, it's like if you were in a restaurant and the chef came out of the kitchen and he said, how was your food? You wouldn't say, well, you cooked it too long, you put too much salt on it, you didn't let the meat rest, and you should have used cayenne pepper instead of chili pepper. And because he would say, don't tell me how to cook. I'm a chef. I do this for a living. Right. So he would say, how is your food? And you would say, here's how I experienced it. It was a little salty for me. I like the meat a little more well done than this. And I enjoyed the spice, but it was a little too spicy for me. And he would probably pick up your plate and turn and go to the kitchen and come back with a brand new plate full of food because he wants you to enjoy what it was that he prepared for you. That's the expectation of experience, meaning that I tell you how I experienced this, and then you have really great information to now adjust. And that's what we're setting people up for, is more like, I'm trying to let you know how I experienced this meal instead of what I think of you as a chef.
Yeah, really helpful. So my last kind of follow-up question leads into this is, so where is the line in with trying to keep the connection and the communication of the trees and, you know, that dialogue that you're just talking about, but then where you may need to then set a boundary and go, okay, this isn't a food bowl. Like, what I guess I'm trying to work out, like, I'm in a journey of never having been taught boundaries and then going, oh, I don't have boundaries, so I get walked over. Now I need to work out how to put boundaries whilst having these conversations of great communication. But then going, but there's a line where you have to, obviously, if it's in spouse, you're covenanted in together, but if it's, say, in friendships or in leadership, where you're kind of going, actually, this is no longer healthy, it's becoming toxic, how you set. Okay, can you hear my question? Like, sometimes there's that place between like difficult relationship and destructive, and kind of working out where's the discernment of which is which, and then when to go, actually, this is the boundary line.
I think you're looking for maintaining respect in your relationship, where when it becomes disrespectful over and over and over again, that's probably where the boundary is, I would love to have this conversation. I would love to pursue a relationship if it's going to be respectful, because the exchange and what I've heard from you, Emma, a little bit with, you know, it sounds like leader didn't agree with your experience, and you could recognize that some was your own stuff as well. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Dad, I feel like maturity is, I don't have to agree with your experience, but I have to be mature enough to hear that you're experiencing me some way. So let me replay back what I want you to experience and see if we can move from there.
And clarify the communication.
Uh-huh.
So let me see if I heard what you said.
Yeah.
Instead of I just react defensively, shut down, flood with adrenaline and cortisol and all the things. I'm just like, I'm preparing for war, instead of, let me see if I heard what you said.
Uh-huh.
And then I say it back, and then they go, no. Okay. And they try to clarify, and you go, let me see if I understood what you said. Because what you're trying to get down to is there too much salt on this?
Yeah. Which I a little bit is the willingness to someone kind of volley back and forth in this conversation is, I'm going to have high levels of respect as we go back and forth and try to find what the truth is. But if you don't have someone that's willing to volley back respectfully, but they're just defensive and disrespectfully, that's the boundary of, hey, I'm not sure what's going on, why don't we try this later? And if that's a continued experience where they're not bringing respect to the relationship, that's probably where I'd have to look at going, man, this person does not seem to have value for what's going on or that I need.
Or they just don't know how to have a respectful conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people don't know how to have a respectful exchange. They get defensive, and then it turns into a battle.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I have zero desire to battle with you. I have every desire to understand what you're trying to communicate.
Right. Does that help, Emma?
Super helpful. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Great. Glad. So we're going to have probably last question again.
Okay.
And we looks like we have
Anita.
Anita.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. My question is, how do you navigate a relationship with someone who is a rescuer when they don't have awareness of that being an issue in your dynamic?
To someone that doesn't understand boundaries. That's what I hear.
or somebody that just needs to be the good guy all the time.
Totally.
Yeah.
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 I'd probably be asking questions of, you know, if this is someone that's trying to rescue me from my life, is that kind of the question, just to clarify, Anita?
Yeah, or it could be just rescuing you in the course of daily life, different experiences.
And have you communicated that you're good and that you didn't need any help, but thanks for trying to help?
Yeah.
Yeah. How does it feel to have someone try to rescue you when you don't need rescuing?
I guess it feels like the person doesn't understand you.
Okay. And
hear you when you communicate that.
So does it feel disrespectful? Does it feel scary? What is the feeling?
I would say disrespectful.
Okay. Have you said that?
We haven't gotten to that point of that being necessary, in terms of like the relationship hasn't continued. So I think I'm asking more hypothetically.
Okay. Well, that one of the things that helps shape behavior in relationships most powerfully is telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Telling the truth. You know, the Bible describes the sword as truth. And it's so true, because when you set the truth out there, like, I know that you're trying to be helpful right now, it feels disrespectful when you step into my situation and take it over or tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And then you'd say, I need to feel powerful in my life when I talk to you about my life.
Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully that helps.
I can speak firsthand to this, and I will share a story with you. Anita, had a friend who, out of the goodness of their heart, is anticipating needs that I have, from really minor to major moments. And, what I found happening before I started speaking the truth was I actually had growing irritation towards them. And funny enough, we had this, we were dog sitting our friend's dog at our house, and she's a very small dog. We have a very big dog. And it reminded me of this little dog, because this little dog was underneath my feet constantly. And I tripped over this dog over the Christmas break so many times because it was just trying to be near me. And I think that was some of the experience I had with this friend, was in their desire to help or assist or give feedback or jump in a spot that I didn't need them, I became like I was tripping over them and almost irritated. And so that actually withheld me from speaking the truth, because I was driven more by my frustration and irritation rather than the ability to see clearly of, oh, I have to give some honest feedback, because otherwise I will disconnect and remove you from my life, thinking that I'm being a powerful person. Okay. So I would just encourage you that when you're able to have that conversation and speaking the truth in love, it chases away that frustration and irritation, because that's really just partnering with being powerless. And so the best way for you to stay powerful is that willingness to have that honest conversation before you just give up on the relationship. And good. And again, I'm a big dog fan, not a little dog, so I don't think we'll ever have one of those in our life again in the kitchen at Christmas. It's just hard.
You just don't see him coming.
I don't see him coming. Just all of a sudden there. So it just, she's trying to help. She's trying to help clean up the floor. poor Josie, but she just couldn't make it.
Okay, we got time for one more.
Okay. Deb, are you? Do you think you could be quick, concise?
We got 5 minutes.
You can do it. I know you can do it.
Okay. I have an adult. I'll be super fast. I have an adult daughter, a sibling, and a friend that I want to restore a closer relationship with. But I often vacillate between feeling like I'm either not doing my job trying to connect with them, or I'm not respecting the distance that they seem to be communicating that they want. My past response to rejection is to just let people go, but I want to keep my love on. So I'm not sure how that's supposed to look in these relationships. Can you help me with that?
Do you have any clue what they need to experience with you?
Not really. I feel they don't answer my questions. When I ask how they're experiencing me or what it is that that they want from the relationship, they're very unclear, or they make comments as if like I should know what they're what they think.
Sure. And if you were to take a stab at it, if you were to take a guess, how do you think they've experienced you, and what do you think they need to feel?
I'll just pick one of those relationships. My friend was feeling overwhelmed with me talking about some of the issues that I was having with my daughter. And I think that she's not very good at communicating that it was overwhelming. And when I was noticing that she wasn't wanting to be around me as much, I kind of, you know, asked her about that and said, you know, I'd really like to fix something. I feel like I've broken something in our relationship, and I, you know, I want you to enjoy our relationship too. And her response was just basically, you know, I just don't think I'm good at friendships, and I don't really, you know, I just think maybe we just can't be friends, or, you know, or she didn't say it like that. She said, this just isn't working. And so I've tried several times to just have not as deep conversations with her. I don't bring up things that I know are unpleasant or triggering to her, but I don't know. I mean, she doesn't want to be friends. Okay, let it go and get over it and move on, make new friends. What else, you know, or should I continue?
Well, she may
to
be right.
And
she may be right. You know, maybe she's not good at engaging in deep emotional process, you know, that not everybody is.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, you have to maybe check yourself as to, do I swim in the sea of negativity as a cultural style? You know, am I really overly critical or negative in my processes? Do I complain? You know, there's something to that, because that's no fun to be around. I mean, and if you find a bunch of friends that'll do that with you, they're not very good friends. So, you know, that might be something like, are you overwhelmed by my ongoing disconnect with my daughter, the pain, are you overwhelmed with the pain that I'm feeling? Like that may be just a setup. Like, You're asking them a specific question instead of, how are you experiencing me? You might say, are you overwhelmed by the chronic nature of the disconnected pain I have with my daughter?
And you could always ask, do you feel like I talk about my daughter and I's relationship too much? I mean, you could make it even simpler than that, you know? But I would say that your friend might not have the same need for depth and intimacy and conversation. And maybe it felt like she had that, but she wasn't communicating that she wasn't enjoying it. So she didn't know what to do except for just disappear mm-hmm. as an escape because she couldn't get from you what you need. And so I think a lot of time with friendships and really relationships in general, that, you know, we're searching for enjoyment. And so if this relationship isn't enjoyment, I've got to ask hard questions. Why is it not enjoyment? Why am I not getting enjoyment from this? And it's, you know, they're not able to contribute. They're not able to challenge. They're not able to meet me in a space of pain. I feel like they're never bringing vulnerability. So your ability to look at this critically isn't with judgment, but really looking like, oh, you know, I've grown. I've become more aware than ever before, and I'm looking for something different. It doesn't mean that they're a bad person. Doesn't mean that they, you know, you can't have a casual coffee date with them, you know, once in a blue moon or whatever. But I would be more on the search of, I need relationships that are going to bring enjoyment to my life, and that I could have these vulnerable exchanges of like, oh man, am I talking too much about my daughter and I again? And they're like, oh, you know, a little bit. Okay, good to know. Tell me about you. I'm all done. I'll clock out of that, you know? And so that's what I'd be searching for, rather than for someone that has no beacon of hope of restoration. You keep your love on and that door's always open, but I don't know that you're going to get from that relationship what you're hoping for, especially if you're in a new season of awareness that they aren't.
Mm-hmm. And I would say people need to feel powerful, you know, people need to feel powerful in order to enjoy the relationship. So, if people aren't feeling powerful especially in a painful, you know, they are seeing you in pain and they don't feel powerful, eventually they start avoiding that powerless situation and that powerful experience, because I'm not helping you mm-hmm. and I don't know what to do. So I'm going to quit visiting you, because it just feels scary and no fun every time we get together. So making sure that people feel powerful with you would be a question that you're asking, like, do you feel like I listen to you? Do you feel like you can influence me? Do you feel like I respect you? I mean, those would be some questions to check to see if people are feeling powerful.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much, Deb, for sharing just kind of the where you're at. And I would go lean into joy and keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well,
thank you.
Okay.
We filled another 45 minutes. I know I say that every time, but how do we do it? We do it every time.
We do it
every time, but this time with a live audience, which is so much fun. So
thank you guys for being on here.
We love it. It's so much fun. And as always, Whole Healthy Families are going to save the world. And thank you so much for helping us with that mission. And we'll be praying for your families, and we'll see you next time on The Kylo Show.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, sound engineered and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families, gonna save the world.